Welcome to Journey to Motherhood, the podcast that has conversations with women who yearn for parenthood and are contemplating or are going through or have gone through so-called unconventional or unspoken of experiences to get there. My desire is that this becomes one of those helpful resources and that the stories of the people who participate will help anyone listening to realize that they are not alone. Welcome back, everyone. I am particularly excited about our discussion today. I am with Buhle. I met Buhle a few years ago as I was going through my own journey, and her story is one of hope and miracles, and just such an honor to have you here, Buhle.
Thanks.
When did you know you wanted to become a mother?
I think being a mother was always part of my life plan, part of my dreams. I saw myself kind of going through the usual, one could say the stereotypical journey of a girl, studying, getting my qualifications, working, meeting someone, and then becoming a mom. I've always liked children, and I just thought, you know, that I would have something to give or something to share with through my children. So yeah, it was always part of my story.
When did you find out that you would potentially have challenges becoming a mother?
Okay, I was about 30 years old, and I was really struggling with the regularity of my periods. So they were all over the place, and what was starting to happen more frequently was actually hot flushes. So I would literally have these sweat sessions. That's all I can. So anyway, I can describe it. It didn't matter what the weather or what I was wearing. I would just overheat and just start sweating. And it was becoming a bit more common than I was expecting. So at first, you know, I thought, oh, maybe, you know, I didn't dress well for the occasion, or I was a bit stressed. And you kind of explained a couple of incidents away. And then you start realizing that, no, this is not right. Something is not okay. And it was starting to affect me socially, actually, because I didn't want to go out now. Because what would happen is, like, I'm sitting with you now, and this is a comfortable room. I actually come out in beads of sweat. And people would look at me and say, are you okay? We both know I'm not okay. And I'd say, I'm fine. And so I thought, okay, let me go to the doctor and have this checked out. I went to see a doctor, and I didn't really have like a regular doctor or anything. So I just went across to the doctor and, you know, explained my situation. And she said, okay, let's just run some blood tests to see. Because she asked me, you know, how's your cycle? When did this start happening, etc. Then the results came back, and she gave me all these readings about these, you know, I think one was follicle stimulation hormone, and the other one, it was FSH and LH, and I forget what the L stands for, among others. And, you know, she says, well, you know, these readings are basically off the charts, so something is wrong. And I must say that my engagement with this doctor, because she was my first doctor, she actually didn't really tell me a lot. She just told me something's wrong with you, and was like, yeah, you need to do more tests. Maybe you should go and see a gynecologist. That's kind of what she said. So I was confused, like, okay, well, like, what is it? And I thought, oh, well, I'm sure it's just irregular periods, and you know, the gynecologist is going to fix me. So I also took my time to actually go across. I waited maybe a couple more months, and then I went, and I think I asked a friend who her gynecologist was, and she said, okay, this is the one I use. And I went across to him, and I explained again my symptoms. He did the same test, and then I remember he sat me down, and then he says, okay, something's wrong. So I said, okay. And he says, now, according to these readings, you are in what we call premature ovarian failure, which means that you've actually gone into menopause.
Oh, wow. You're 30.
At the age of 30, 31. And so I was like, okay, so like, what are you saying again? And he says, well, you don't have any more eggs. So you can't, you don't have any more eggs. And that's why you've been going through basically what are the symptoms of menopause. Your period has kind of come to an end. And, this is your situation. This is where you're at. So I said, okay. At the time I wasn't in a relationship. And so I just asked him, so what does this mean for me? Because I want to have children one day. And he says, well, you can't.
Oh.
You're not going to be able to have children. So I was like, okay. And I remember I had gone there. It was a routine appointment on my own to the gynecologist, as people do, as women do. And as I was walking to my car, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I can't have children. I know I'm not in a relationship or anything like that, but what do you mean I can't have children? And it was really painful. And I just stood in the car park and I stood by my car and I cried. I cried and I cried and I cried because I didn't understand why was this happening to me and what did I do for this to happen. And, you know, the doctor was very, very gentle. He was a good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, these things happen. You know, it's a certain percentage of women that go through this and it's just, you're part of that percentage. Then he went into, okay, this is what I can do to help you, at least to manage the hot flushes so that you don't go through that. And he put me on a plan that I needed to take for the rest of my life so that I can, it's basically hormone therapy, just to handle that. And yeah, so that's when I knew. And I shared it with a close friend of mine. And I also mentioned it to my sisters. But I kind of said, you know, the doctor said that I might not be. I didn't say it's a definite.
Mm.
I just said, you know, there's something wrong. And, you know, he just said, I'll have trouble conceiving.
Mm.
And so my family response, my siblings was just, we'll pray for you. It'll be fine. You'll be okay.
God will intervene.
Yes.
Did you have therapy? Did you have anyone to have an honest conversation with about this and
no
a space to cry
no.
and grieve
no I didn't. I just kind of took it on and cracked on with life.
Oh, wow.
So I guess that moment in the car park was my was my moment. So then fast forward a couple of years and I met my partner who I'm with now. Mm. And we spoke about children, you know, we spoke about family, and he's a very family-oriented guy and works with children as well. Children love him. So we both knew we wanted to have children. So I said, okay, well, I explained to him that I do have a situation. I'm on this therapy. They said that I would, you know, that I would have trouble conceiving.
Mm.
And so we need to go and see the doctor. And see what they say. And what I thought was, I'm just not going to be able to conceive naturally, so I'll need to go for IVF or some kind of assisted
reproduction
process.
Yes. Yeah.
So I had a good friend who had gone through IVF. And so, you know, she recommended this place. And so we went across and we met the doctor for our first consultation. And again, he did the blood work and he did a scan of my ovaries. And then he sat us down and he said, okay, I've had a look and your ovaries are the size of a dried up raisin.
Wow.
Yeah. That is it. Like he tried to, so I could, it'll be something that I can actually visualize. He says, they're shrunken. There's nothing there.
Oh.
And, you actually cannot produce eggs. To have a baby. So I said, okay, so let's give me something that'll make me make eggs. I'm like, fine, it's fine. And then he explained to me that you're actually born with a certain number of eggs. And as you have your period, you lose those eggs.
Mm.
And over time, they then become depleted. You get into menopause and it's all done. It's gone.
Mm.
You cannot make more eggs. What you have is what you have. It's that conversation, you know, it's going back to those emotions that I had when I spoke to the gynecologist a couple of years prior. And I was again shocked. I didn't understand, like, how does this happen? How do you say a person runs out of eggs? I thought we're born with millions of them, just like guys are born with millions of sperm. It's, that's how it is. Then he said no. And again, in that session, I cried. I cried for myself. I cried for my partner because I felt that I was depriving him as well of the opportunity to be a father. And I felt that I had let him down. I had disappointed him. And now he was with me and I was broken.
Oh.
What do we do now? And so again, the specialist that we met with was phenomenal. Such a gentleman. And I guess he's had these conversations so many times, but it didn't feel like he was reading off a script. He spoke to me like he was speaking to his daughter. And he just said, there are other ways. You need to look into donor. You can have a donor egg. You can have donor embryos. And I started hearing about all these concepts that I'd never heard of in my life.
Wow.
The only thing I knew of was IVF. That was as advanced of assisted, you know, assisted conception as I knew. That you would take my egg, you take a sperm, and so on. And now you're telling me that I can get someone else's. And he said, I'm going to give you time. I don't want an answer now. But I want you to know that if you want to pursue having a family, you still can. But you need to understand what your options are.
That's so important.
Yeah. And that's where we started. And it was a lot of, we needed time as a couple to talk through this. And for him to also understand what this meant and is he okay? I know my constant question to him was, are you okay with this? We don't have to do this. And I was actually trying to tell him, you don't have to stay with me.
Oh.
Because I can't give you this. And I know that you'd be an amazing father and you should do this. So don't let me be the reason you don't have children. And so don't let me be the reason that you stay. So, yeah.
And what would his response be? I mean, that's, wow.
He just kept saying, it'll be fine. We're going to have children. And I actually remember thinking, didn't you hear what the doctor said?
Should I take you through biology 101 again? Like,
yeah, it's like zero. Yes. So like zero can't make more, you know.
Did you ever take out a prune, a raisin? Sorry.
You know what? Every time I see raisins now, and my son loves them, I'm just like, right. But yeah, I know. We had the conversation, and he was so steadfast. He just kept saying, "We're gonna have a baby," and for him, it was so black and white. And I was like, you know, whatever he's smoking, I think I need some of that because he's seeing something that I don't see. But we then decided, okay. We're going to do this. We're going to try.
And he was comfortable with?
Very.
So what was the process? What does we're going to try mean? What was the process that you went through?
So we needed to go to a donor agency, an egg donor agency. And what they do is, first of all, they have actually had a session with us as a couple to talk about the journey. And
so the psychologist.
With a psychologist. And that was actually really important because she asked you questions like, why do you want to have a baby? Do you understand what this route means? Just to kind of figure out where our heads were at and to make sure that we are also in the right emotional space and we've had the necessary conversations to continue on this journey. And I think it was also good for me because she needed to, she took time as well to talk to me and say that, but you're not broken. It's just, this is just your story. This is where you're at. It's not a definition of who you are. It doesn't make you any less of a woman. And you have a partner who loves you and is committed to going on this journey with you. that says a lot already. You're both here voluntarily. You know, she kind of just broke it down for me to say, for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 reasons, know that you're in the right space and you guys can go through it, but you need to go through it together.
At this point in time, are you talking to anyone else about what the two of you are going through in this journey?
No.
So no one knows what you're going through, none of your family, none of your friends.
No.
Wow.
We were still exploring, I guess. We just thought we're still exploring. But it's funny, as you take the steps, you just go deeper and deeper. And before you know it, you're quite advanced in the process. But, I mean, we did inform people, which I'll just talk to in a minute. But so we, after our psychologist session, she then said, okay, so this is how we work. We have basically profiles of usually young women between the ages of, I think it was about, early 20s to 30, some may have already donated eggs, and some can be approached, you know, they've already been screened or whatever and can be approached to then donate eggs for you. So you need to go through the profile and see if there's anyone that you like or that appeals to you. And what we were provided with is just an outline of the donor. We chose local donors. So it's more, you know, what is their, in our case, we are both Black African.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to have a Black African baby. Mm-hmm. And so we chose Black African
donors.
Yes. And you would get to know, like, what tribe are they from? You know, are they Sotho? Are they Zulu, etc.? Mm-hmm. What tribe is their mother? What tribe is their father? What color are their eyes? In our case, you know, their skin tone. And then you're given a picture of the donor as a baby.
Okay.
They keep it anonymous so that, you know, you don't actually get to know, because you might recognize someone in the in the pile. And once you have photos, you know, you can, with internet these days, you could literally track a person down.
Hmm.
But they do keep it for legal reasons as well. They keep it completely anonymous so the donor doesn't know who they're donating to, and you don't know who you're receiving from.
Wow. And were there a lot of donors to choose from?
It's actually not too many. It went through cycles. A lot of the donors were studying.
Mm.
So they're university students or in some kind of tertiary education. And it's kind of when they're writing exams, it's quiet because they're not really busy. But the other side of it is actually, it's incredible how many other Black African people were looking for donors.
Wow.
I thought we were going to be like, you know, it was going to be a pretty easy walk in the park. But when we went through the profiles, what we did is myself and my partner sat down, went through profiles and kind of read through them. What do they like? And it's, you know, they'd ask things like, what book are you reading? What's your favorite movie? And I remember I really don't like Tyler Perry movies.
Anyone who said Tyler Perry.
Anyone, especially if they mentioned Madea, I was like, no.
No, you're out.
But they also asked things like, what's your personality like? Try and describe your personality. So they try to give you a flavor of what kind of person you're dealing with. And when we were choosing, we also wanted someone who's not light-skinned, you know. So we wouldn't go for someone who's extremely light-skinned because then maybe that child would be that way and wouldn't resemble either of us.
Mm.
And what we had decided in, you know, to speak to your question as to who we talked to, we wanted to keep it as private as possible.
Mm.
And the reason for that was we know our families, know the people you're dealing with. And I know, we both know from both our sides that firstly, it would be a concept that they probably would struggle with to understand.
Mm.
And I think that they, even for myself, you know, there's certain comments that might be made out of ignorance and maybe sometimes even just to hurt, which I wasn't willing to even risk having those kind of conversations. So we both agreed that we were going to keep the whole process private and to ourselves.
Mm.
So in keeping with that, we wanted to have a child who was not too far from us in terms of resemblance. Yeah.
Mm, you were telling me about the donor process.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we sat down and we actually wrote it down in a notebook. We had a yes, no, and a maybe. And obviously the no's were out. Then we'd go through the maybes and see, are there any maybes that we could promote to possible yeses?
Okay.
And then once we had all our yeses, we worked through those yeses and came up with, I think, our top three. We submitted those choices to the agency. And funny enough, all of our top three were taken.
Wow. How long had it taken between getting the options
mm-hmm.
and deciding on your top three?
I think we decided in about a week.
So in a week?
A week or a week
your
or
options
two weeks.
Have been taken
yeah.
because the demand is there.
Is that high?
Again, coming back to my point that people don't talk about this, but so many people are living it.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. your top three goes, do you so then go to the maybe list?
So, well, I think our yeses were about six.
Mm.
So we took the next three. And of those, I think we got the top of our next three.
Mm.
And we got the profile and then they're like, okay, fine. We were assigned to a nursing coordinator who then would help us through the whole preparation process.
And what does that mean?
So, the nurse, in my case, because basically I didn't have a menstrual cycle, I was pretty much ready to go at any time.
At any point.
Yeah, you didn't need to worry about when was your last period. What we then had to see was, you know, are we going for frozen or eggs that were already like pre-frozen or if we were going to actually look for someone and approach them. Now, for our three, they were already frozen.
Okay.
So her eggs were already in the bank. What we just needed to do was now to prepare my body. So my body just needed to, I needed to take a course of hormones that would prepare my uterus. So my lining needed to be right. Mainly to thicken my lining so that it could then receive.
Plantation.
Yes. So I went through that. I think it was the whole cycle happened over a month.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and prior to that, funny enough, in faith, I started taking these prenatal tablets. So I was drinking folic acid and all these other things, which funny enough, the nurse recommended anyway.
Okay. Said,
okay, you need to start taking this because this also helps.
Mm.
So I had taken my vitamins. I was taking the hormones. Then they took, my partner then needed to provide his sperm, and we went for the fertilization.
Mm.
They told us at the time, I think we had eight eggs in the bank
mm-hmm.
and six fertilized successfully.
Oh, nice.
And so we had six ready to go. And then you kind of wait, gosh, I should have actually researched this before.
It's okay.
But we had to wait until day five from insemination as they watched the embryos develop to make sure that they would be successful embryos.
So before they put them?
Before they implant
them.
Yes, so they get a bit of a chance to sort of grow in vitro and then they get transferred. So they give you a choice. How many do you want to transfer? Do you want to transfer all six one shot and, you know, possibly have six, you know, kids? or do you want to do it in batches? So we just said, okay, we'll do two at a time because at least twins we can do. Six triplets we weren't quite ready for.
I know I wanted to be a mother, Lord, but
yeah.
Now it's too much.
Yeah. We went through that and it was all aligned. I took my tablets. I did everything as required. The day came, we took the two embryos, and they put you like in the theater, your partner, husband, whoever is going to be with you in the room can sit with you and they actually show you your little,
your embryos, your uterus, your, I don't know.
No, the little cup where the embryos.
The petri have, dish, the like, petri dish, okay, yeah.
So they show you a petri dish, which has got your name, and, you know, they ask you to confirm everything so that you're sure that everything is.
Yes.
Been taken accordingly. So I must say they're very, very good and particular about being clear every step of the way up to transfer. Mm. Then they implanted them. And, you know, they just said, you know, so I said, do I need to stay on my back all day? Like, what if they fall out? Yeah. Like, what do I do? And the doctor said, no, you are fine. You can go about your business as normal. They will not fall. If you go to the bathroom, you're not going to pee the, you know, pee them out.
I remember thinking that as well. Like, walk with my legs kind of crossed the whole day.
Yes. So we implanted and then we had to wait 2 weeks. And then you get your pregnancy confirmation,
okay,
or result. That is the longest 2 weeks ever. We got to the end of the 2 weeks and I was not pregnant. Yeah. So here we go. And you're thinking, now we did it. Like, I saw the embryos. Mm-hmm. Everything was successful. What do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And here we go again.
Yes.
Now what? What did I do wrong this time?
Because I've come this far.
Yeah.
We're now using proper medical, scientific processes.
Mm.
It should work.
Exactly. But, you know, the one thing that my doctor said is, he said, I'm going to do everything in my power to help make these two meet, you know, the egg and the sperm, and I'll do everything that I can to implant. But the final switch is with another power.
Mm.
It's not in my hands.
Mm.
It is not guaranteed. So you need to know this and you need to be ready for it. And so at the time you're like, yeah, yeah, sure, yeah, we're ready. I was not ready.
Mm.
So we got the negative confirmation and I was devastated. Again, you know, I spoke with my partner and he said, we had six. We got another four in the bank. Let's get the other, you know, let's get busy. Let's get the other two.
I do like his approach to life.
His world is very black and white. Mm. It's so simple. So I pulled myself together and we waited. I think we waited about 3 months though.
Mm.
And then I went for my second attempt and it didn't take again.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So now you've got two embryos left.
There's two left. So we waited for those. We waited a bit. And then, so what happens is when the eggs have been fertilized, they are stored, right? So they're kept, they're frozen basically. And when they then thaw them before fertilization, before implantation, again, they observe them to make sure everything is still mm-hmm. fine. So now we're down to the last two, and those were thawed, and something was wrong. We couldn't implant those. So now our whole cycle with donor number one was gone. And now we would need to start again. Yeah. So that was obviously very hard. We waited a year, and then we started again. We went back to the donor agency. They gave us more profiles. We sat down, we had a yes list, we had a maybe list, we had a no list, we eliminated, and we selected our top three.
And what was it like this time around? Was it the same level of excitement? Was there now?
It was the same, but this time I remember they can also tell you if a donor has donated before, and if that donation resulted in a successful pregnancy. So I was fixated on this. I want, you know, donors who have donated and have resulted in successful pregnancies.
Because then now I also know their eggs work.
Yes.
So now you're like testing, exactly. Testing your donors.
Exactly. So that's what I did. So on our top three, funny enough, none of them had donated before. Of the ones who had donated before, my partner actually didn't like something in their profiles, or it's just a feeling.
Mm.
So our top selection was not available. Again, she was taken pretty quickly.
Wow.
But we got our second choice. It was quite, we both liked her profile as well. And then What happened with her is we took her eggs, we went for the insemination, and all of them did not pass the 5-day success. It seemed she had low quality eggs. We had low quality embryos. So that didn't work. So now that's donor number 2, round number 2. All eggs gone. Nothing. Yeah. In the meantime, I think I can mention that with regards to who I talked to, I shared this with 2 close friends to say, this is the journey that I'm on and this is what we want to do. So they kind of knew. I think I managed the information that I shared with them.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of knew at least like, okay, it's worked or it has not worked. And that helped. It helped to have people to talk to. I think one thing that I'd like to say for anyone who is a friend to someone who's going through this journey and it's not working is, you are such an important part of that process. They need you just to talk, just to air things out, to let whatever's going on in their head and in their heart out. And I know in my case, I had really, really good support. And that made a world of difference. Because even in your partnership, it becomes all you obsess about, the two of you. Because you're carrying on with life, but a significant part of your life is now on the spotlight and things are not working.
Mm-hmm.
And what you could do is almost just talk about it all the time. You don't want to do that as well because it's really stressful on both of you. And I know, they also mentioned that a lot of couples go through a lot of strain when going through this process and not all make it at the end, even after the success.
It's broken their relationship. Broken,
because it's tested so many things or things are said. You just change. You're both trying to process this all the time.
Mm.
And much as you say you're not, you are thinking about it all the time.
Mm.
And so it was nice for me to have somewhere else to go and vent. Yeah, as I said, my friends were very supportive to the point where, they were also like, you will have this baby. Why didn't you try this? Why didn't you try adoption? Why didn't you try this? And I know it was well-intentioned, but every process is unique and precious.
Mm.
And one should not be a consolation prize for the other.
You're the second person who has said
that. So it was, and so I understood the heart when they'd say, this isn't working out. Maybe why don't you just go and adopt? I'm not changing a red pair of shoes for a black pair of shoes.
Mm.
I want this to be my journey. I want to carry a child. Mm. I want to nurse a child. And so until I have felt that I no longer want to go this path, then let's have the conversation about alternatives.
Yes.
And let the child who is adopted be adopted because they were the first prize.
Yes.
Not because other things failed and you'll do.
Yes, like you're an option B.
Yes.
Mm.
I think that was important. And it was hard for me to articulate that to my friends without also being offensive or seeming like, now I'm going to shut the last door that I have to go and air my feelings.
I had someone just tell me straight up. they're like, no, I need to grieve this first. I need to go through this first and see it through. And if it doesn't work out biologically, let me go through my process of grieving because adoption is not a plan B. Mm. It is when I'm going down that road, it becomes plan A,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So we waited another year, if not 2. I can't remember now. Then we were like, okay, let's do it again. And this time also the doctor, our specialist said, I'm also here to support you. I mean, this is very obviously financially strenuous.
Mm.
And he had been with us from day one up to here. And every round, what happens is you will pay your whatever amount it is for your cycle.
Mm.
And let's say you have 8 eggs. So you've got 8 opportunities to be pregnant. So you'll pay, let's say it's 100,000. You pay your 100,000. And then for every time they implant, you're not just paying for the lab time and the medication.
So it's not a full 100,000 each time.
Yeah. But once it's done, it's done. So when you come back, you're going to put out
another 100,000.
But by then, you know, the prices have gone up, and because we kept waiting like a year, it's gone up. So yeah, it was a lot. And so that, you know, the specialist was kind enough to actually say, I'm going to discount some of my fees, my charges to you.
That's so kind.
He was so invested in this process. And I remember when the second time around, when all the eggs failed, he phoned me personally and he sounded like he wanted to cry. He sounded really stressed, like, I don't know what happened. I don't know why this is, but these things can happen. You know, it does happen. That much as we have screened a donor and we've gone through all of that, if her eggs turn out to be low quality, it is what it is. So we went back, chose again, got another donor, got more embryos.
And this third time around, same criteria, or are you like changing the criteria slightly, or?
No, we pretty much had, you know, the one thing we wanted was at least someone who was pursuing their education, and who showed some kind of interest in ambition, who had some kind of ambition. So that was important to us. And yeah, again, we were still on the skin tone and that kind of thing. So we got our donor. This time around, a couple of the eggs did not take. And so we actually had two
embryos.
Two embryos. And it was now all or nothing. These are the ones we got, and we're going to go for it.
So
that was quite stressful. For sure. And so we went for the implantation, and it was a success.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess I cry a lot in this, cried a lot in this process. Because when the nursing sister phoned to tell me that they'd done the blood tests and it was a positive result, I actually couldn't speak. I just wailed and wailed and wailed, and she just put the phone down. And she said, I'll call you back in 30 minutes. And then she called me back, and I was still wailing. But, I managed to actually string a couple of sentences together. And yeah, then we did the scan. We saw, you know, we heard the heartbeat, all of those things. Well, you know, as you go through the process, and we now have a beautiful son.
And what was pregnancy like? Because I do think one of the probably misconceptions about donor egg or donor embryo is it your child? So now you've got a child growing inside of you. I mean, that's just a miracle. How did that feel? Did you ever feel disconnected?
No.
Did you ever feel like you weren't the mother of this child?
What happens once the embryo is implanted is entirely you. That's you. These are your cells that are growing, helping to grow this child. You are the one who is feeding this child. It's your body that's accommodating this child. So all of that is you. I mean, when they kick, they're kicking my stomach. It's not that they're kicking the donor's stomach.
Although sometimes you probably are like, maybe just go kick someone else.
Yeah. And pregnancy for me was great. I never had morning sickness. I just had like all day nausea. I don't know which is worse for some time, but, I went through everything pretty standard. So when I finally was pregnant, I was a little older. So I was considered a high risk pregnancy just geriatric. Because I was now, I know, geriatric which I absolutely hated. But I was over 35, and so it was. So the only thing was, towards the end, my blood pressure was now starting to act up a bit, and so I had, you know, the swelling of the feet, and I think I was hospitalized for 2 weeks prior to delivery, just to control my blood pressure and to allow more time for the baby to go through all the developmental stages before delivery. But it was a successful delivery, and he's a beautiful, healthy young man.
He keeps you very busy, I'm sure.
Keeps me very, very busy. Yeah.
So what will you share with him? What have you thought about that? Have you and your partner?
At this stage, we have said that we're not going to share anything. Because he's our child. He is loved. He was born of me. He looks like his father, like you don't believe. At this stage, we don't think it's necessary. We don't think we're taking anything away from him by not telling him. Because really, we're just talking about the science of how he came to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's different if he was adopted.
Mm.
Maybe. Because then he has something to trace back.
Mm.
But even if I told him, I've got nothing to trace back.
Mm.
Yeah. And as we watch him grow, the things that I had reservations about not telling, I see some of it kind of mildly. Everyone asks, who does he look like? You know, that's the
yeah,
first
that's
thing.
The first question, right?
Does he look like you? And it's actually quite hilarious because so many of my husband's family say that our son looks like my father.
And you might.
And I will show you a photo. They really look alike.
Yep.
So then you get into the whole nature versus nurture conversation. Mm. And for me, this is where he is so much our child. This is our son.
Mm.
Because we are the ones who are sowing into him.
Mm.
We spend time with him. He learns little sayings from us.
Mm. Mannerisms.
Yes. Mm. If he's going to enjoy reading, it's because we read with him.
Mm.
If he's going to enjoy sport, it's because we play with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are raising him our way. We're raising him to be of our tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is home for him. He has no other home.
Wow, that's profound.
That's how we feel. And that's how we're going through with it as well. I'll be honest, I have gone back and I've checked the donor's baby photo. To see, okay, so what did you actually pass on to our son that looks like you?
Mm.
And there are similarities, definitely.
Mm.
There are similarities. And all I can say to that young lady is thank you. Thank you for helping me. Thank you for being part of my answered prayer.
Mm.
You were part of my journey just as much as the doctors and the nurses and the friends who listened. And the vitamins that I took and everything else, it all came together.
Just the folic acid.
I'm telling you. So I thank her and I think about her.
Mm.
And I'm so grateful. Yeah, I'm really, really grateful.
So in closing, if someone's listening to this and maybe they've been driving from the doctor and they've just been told, look, you don't have enough eggs or you don't have any eggs or you can't have a child. What would you say to that person?
You are enough. You are already enough and you were made that way. And if you really, really, really want to have a baby, pursue all the options that are presented to you.
Mm.
When I would pray, I would actually say that if I'm not supposed to have this baby, then take away this desire.
Mm.
Because it's in me. It's so ingrained in me.
I yearn for this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you've provided me with so much. You've blessed us with the resources that we were able to financially cope. You've blessed us with resources of places we can go for information. You gave me a partner who was so understanding and was with me every step of the way.
Who just loved you through it.
He did. He really did. So if this is not for me, then like I need, it's very clear writing on the wall. I need you to turn something off because I can't turn it off.
Mm.
So if you really, really want it, even for those who are told that they don't have enough eggs, those who are struggling to fall pregnant, as long as you want it, keep trying
mm-hmm.
until either time no longer allows or you have made peace with it that you don't want it anymore. And be kind to yourself. Also give yourself time. So I think for us, I know we took those breaks of a year each time. It was good. We needed to just stop with that because it is all consuming. Don't put yourself through a battery of over and over and over. And this failed. Now we're going to do this and we're going to do it tomorrow. Give yourself time to work through it and then try again.
And I know when you're going through it, it seems like it's a long break. But it probably also was healthy for your relationship because you need to find yourselves again after each attempt.
Yeah, definitely you do. You need to be in the right headspace. I mean, just for normal, yeah, that's the other thing that I want to mention. I've just caught myself making the same mistake. Every process is normal. Every process is natural. The common question to just IVF babies is, so was your baby natural or was it IVF?
I feel like...
Well, I didn't pluck him off a tree.
My child was not born with like two horns and a tail.
Exactly. So every process is a natural process. All that's happening is somebody is trying to help you get to that point while avoiding certain things that we know are a problem, right? But the gift of life comes from a source that is outside of our abilities. So never think that, you know, it's a freak baby or any of those weird terms that people use. It's very, you know, your child is very much your child and of you. So whatever path you choose is your natural, is your normal path. And walk it.
I love that. I'm actually going to close with that because I think it's so profound. Every process is a natural process because we need to normalize the fact that so many of us need assistance to become mothers. We need to destigmatize it. We don't talk about it enough. And it's hard to talk about it because it's deeply personal and you feel like you've lost something. You feel like I've failed at something. But I do think that the support that can be given in more people knowing that you're walking this journey is so important. And part of that support comes from just understanding it is a natural journey.
Yeah.
Many people are walking this particular path. Many people are struggling to have children in what we thought was the natural and normal way.
Yes.
And it's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay.
And if you need to manage your environment like what we have actively chosen to do, because a lot of statements are out of ignorance.
Yes.
Right? So I don't want to deal with someone who says, well, you know, what do you expect? Like, it's not really your son.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe, yeah, well, you know, I guess it's kind of complicated because like we don't know where he came from. I don't want that. And so for that reason, knowing who I'm dealing with and for my husband, partner, it's the same. So we managed that. But you must have a place where you must communicate as the two of you so that you're on this journey together. And if you, and you must have somewhere where you do get a chance to talk. And it's not just you Googling stuff because Google is also something, the source of the worst confusion. So have, if it's going to be a trusted friend, if it's going to be a pastor, if it's going to be a psychologist, have someone that you talk to because you need that as well. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Buhle. I loved your story. I think of it as one of the miracles that I have been privileged enough to witness in life. So thank you.
Thanks, CJ.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.